Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. It's Wednesday, right? You know what day it is. Days all seem the same, but there is one thing that makes Wednesday special, and that is J.R. Jackson, who is here. How's it
back
going, J.R.?
Back in its rightful place. My head is crooked. Back in its rightful place on a Wednesday instead of Tuesdays. I've been getting complaints. We've been getting postcards. We've been getting suggestion boxes filled with people upset about this switch, John. It's all up to you to change this.
I know. I don't know why I keep forcing you to switch with Emma each week at the last minute. I don't know why I did that.
you're a madman. Fast. I know we have a lot to get to, but I had a thought, and I've been figuring this out since the whole quarantine and coronavirus and social distancing and gloves and mask wearing has begun. I've been wanting to ask everybody, what is it that is so obvious that they should have been doing before to not just catch normal germs that now they're going to do for the rest of their lives? Which I have like two things, because now I'm crazy cautious, but punching the thing, like when I went to the store, punching your card information after you buy something, I'll never touch those things again.
No, it's okay. We'll figure it out. You know what I do?
And number two is money itself, cash.
Money's always been disgusting.
Yeah, this thing. So these two things are obvious things that we should have always known, but now I actually caught on. Like some people's, it's washing their nasty hands. Mm-hmm. Mine is touching those card machines.
Yeah. Yeah, look, what I do is when I have to, like, unlock something and then do the key, like the code, I use the key to do the code. And when I swipe my card, I use the card to press the buttons. So I figure I'm safe, right? Probably good. So look, a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the quarantine and how long it might end up lasting. We're going to have that. I see some people in the comments are asking about the stimulus checks. We're going to be that's like the first third of our show is going to be talking about the stimulus checks and two ways that they are turning into a scam, effectively, over and above the issues that we already had with them. So we're going to be talking about that as well as a whole bunch of other stuff. I am going to do the thing that I do, which is, you know, radical honesty. I'm in a really bad mood today. I feel a little bit better already because JR is on the show, and I'm hoping to get in a better mood. I will sort of talk about a little bit why when we talk about Chris Cuomo a little bit later on.
Yeah.
But to put myself in a little bit of a better mood, I'm going to recommend something that on quarantine you should definitely watch. I don't even know if this is new. My wife just put it on yesterday. I hadn't seen it before. I think it was on Netflix. There's a special that was produced around the Mark Twain Prize that was awarded to Dave Chappelle, and it was of like the ceremony of all of his friends and other actors and comedians and musicians all talking about him, telling stories about him and stuff, and then bits of his stand-up. It was a ton of fun. If you're looking for something to help just forget what's going on, I think it's on Netflix, so check for that. It's Dave Chappelle getting the Mark Twain Award.
Wow. Well, that's feel good. Good.
It was. Yeah, I'm in a bad enough mood that I don't even know if, like, I'm prepared to do this. Like, are the videos ready? Sort of, I guess. We'll see.
The only way anyone knows you're ever in a bad mood, John, is for you to say that I'm in a bad mood, because your demeanor, your face, and the way that your tone just does not denote that.
Yeah, that's a weird – this is trivia, I guess. One of my weird, like, psychological, I guess, defense mechanisms is when I'm in a bad mood, when I'm really angry, I sort of smile, I guess. Like, I try to force myself into a better mood, which is a little bit crazy. Let's keep it real. But anyway, okay, so everyone who is already in the chat, thank you so much for joining us. And so rapidly, please hit the like button if you haven't already so that more people can hear about the stream. Lauren, it looks like, took my recommendation to watch Mythic Quest. Everyone should watch Mythic Quest. It's awesome. And Aaron Ryan, who's been a guest on this show and on the network, wrote for it. So that's awesome, so definitely go check that out. We're going to be reading your super chats and hashtag TDR lives throughout. I can see we already have some, including Unprecedented Madness saying, I can hear someone eating in the background. Is Johnny Derulo eating cookies right before they go live? I think that was actually JR's just getting his beard ready to go.
When was that? That was early on?
Yeah, well, so while the slate is up, you know, our mics are active, so people can always hear what we're doing. I need to work on that.
Chips. Currently, the quarantine beard is, sounds like chips.
Exactly. And this is like I'm eating a nutty bar, I guess. Anyway, okay. So with that, everyone continued, you know, to engage. We're going to read some of that, but we're going to jump into the first story now. The stimulus checks, that tiny bit of the federal government's reaction to coronavirus that actually had anything to do with you, with regular working Americans, those are coming, supposedly. You might have already gotten yours, in fact, if you have direct deposit. If you have, if you're getting a check, you might be in for a bit of a wait, and you might also be in for a bit of surprise, because something might be on your check that you might not have expected. That is that the Treasury Department has ordered President Trump's name printed on stimulus checks. The IRS is rushing to send to tens of millions of Americans, a process that could slow their delivery by a few days. And I would say, JR, that in this difficult time where people are struggling, millions and millions out of work every week, they're struggling to pay rent, they're struggling to keep their family fed, if they are going to have to wait longer, it should be to get his name on the check, I think. I think people understand. They get thrown out of their apartment, the check shows up 2 days later, and then they look and they say, it was worth it in the end.
Okay. I shouldn't say insane. I shouldn't say maddening. I shouldn't say any of those things because none of it's true. Like, this is the most predictable thing we can imagine. If someone said, hey, so in the middle of the pandemic, when the whole thing about the $1,200 checks even was first talked about, and they say, hey, you guys, hey, in a couple of weeks, Trump is going to delay this so he can do an unprecedented move of putting his name on Treasury Department things that are being sent out to Americans in relief. The one-time payment that was people already had enough issue with that it's a one-time thing for $1,200, maybe, for some, then Trump is going to still hold that up just for the sake of putting his name on it so he can let you guys know, hey, in case you didn't know, I was the president during that time when we went through that pandemic that I was completely unprepared for, that I dropped the ball on for an entire month and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, there's so much that makes me mad about this. For most people, they won't see it because it'll be direct deposit. They won't see the actual check. So I acknowledge that. And so that'll probably be the vast majority. But for people who don't have tax information that's available and all that, or current address, they will get this. There are so many issues with that. First of all, it is not his goddamn money. He's not giving it to you. He had jackass to do with you getting that money. And if they hadn't, let's say they passed the bill and it didn't have the stimulus checks. What? Do you think that Trump was going to veto it because it doesn't do enough to help working and poor Americans? Does anyone think that? Does anyone think that he gives a damn about the amount of those checks, if future checks are forthcoming? Is he putting pressure behind the scenes to make sure that this sort of pittance, this one-time check, is going to be followed up by additional assistance for the millions of Americans who are still going to be out of work, you know, come the end of the month, who are still going to have to pay their rent and won't have the means to do so? Does anyone think that he gives a damn about any part of this process other than for some millions of Americans, making it seem as if Trump is writing me a check? Does anyone really think that?
It's crazy, but now I need to know what percentage of Americans would see that.
I have no idea.
And it actually sways their opinion of him, sways potentially how they'll vote. Be like, oh yeah, but Donald Trump gave us those $1,200 checks because his name was on it.
I don't know how many will get it. I don't know how many will notice it. I don't know how many will be swayed by it. But the simple fact that it's happening is just, it's like, look, the damage that Trump has done is substantive and long term. And this effectively has nothing to do with that. That's 98% of the problem with Trump. But the other 2% is the daily insult to our intelligence, to our expectations for what the people we vested with a nearly unlimited political power will do with that power. It is the constant needle to our temporal lobe. And this is a great example of that. And it's one that it's not just a random sort of childish outburst or something like this. He is using his position as president in an unprecedented way, which I'll get into in just a sec, to try to benefit himself in the election. We can have a debate, an intellectual debate, about whether it's likely to work or how many people it's likely to influence, but he's doing it, and I really don't think that this is going to be the last effort, that he's going to do this and then be like, I've done enough. I think I'm just going to cruise by on my record at this point. And so it's also a warning for more of what's to come. What else is he going to do with the sole purpose of trying to stay in office?
That's the idea. So, I mean, this has been telegraphed, as I mentioned at first. So the daily task force briefings have devolved quite steadily into anger and fights with the press every time to talk about what he has done and trying to recreate history about what his legacy is going to be with this. That's all it's turned into, and to the point where now the journalists are even upset about having to do these things at all. So, and because he misses his rallies, he wants to make sure he has those. I need to still keep some kind of advantage over Biden, have more face time. I need to start putting out propaganda videos. Everything he does, as we've said since he was running in 2015, have said how everything he does is for himself. And until people, well, I don't know, I think people are picking up on it. I don't think I can even say until people pick up on that, because I think they have. And he is his own worst enemy. It's just a matter of time for people to finally realize it. And the fact that he's putting himself out there every day to show us and do things like this, I think helps.
Yeah. And look, I don't want to go on about this for a long time, so just a couple more details that I found to be interesting. Yeah. One, he's not an authorized signer for legal disbursements, which is why it's going to be on the memo line. So they're going to force it on there, even though they did it. He probably wanted just a formal signature. They were saying, no, you can't do that. So, okay, then put me on the memo. So that's true. Also, I just thought this was interesting. Trump had privately suggested to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who oversees the IRS, that he allow the president to formally sign the checks, according to three administration officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. And I don't know if this is Trump derangement syndrome, but I am now forced to consider the possibility that he wanted to personally sign each one of these checks, not realizing that would take literally decades to sign millions of checks, you massive, massive moron. Maybe just, not. You know, maybe not.
Have them, you know, I don't know if there's a machine. You know, I know there's like the stamping signature thing. Maybe they just pump it through a machine and they make sure they create like the printing script of his signature.
I mean, if I were to like give him any sort of benefit of the doubt, I would think that. But, like, then what does he mean by formally sign the checks? That implies it's something other than what we would have expected, which is a machine. Right. Anyway, look, so that's probably just a tangent. But more importantly, the paper checks that are going to be issued are going to be issued at a rate of $5 million each week until September.
Jeez.
Which means, and look, supposedly they're starting with the lowest income taxpayers. That's what they say, at least. We'll see. But that means that this tiny bit of money, this nothing in comparison to what they're giving to corporations and the tax cuts that they already gave to people who 100% didn't need it, you might not get it for literally months. Hopefully you will, and hopefully the percentage who are getting the checks will be a small percentage and we'll get through it in just a couple of weeks. But they're planning for this to take literally months. What person who needs a $1,200 check can wait until the fall to get it?
Yeah, and that's the whole idea, right? So again, it's already held up normally for that process. That's when we'll make it clear, at least. This whole signing thing and formally trying to sign checks to go out isn't what's going to make it take till September. That was already going to be a case for the last of the people to get it in September. So this is just an extra delay. Maybe it's only by like several days. Maybe it's only by a week. But several days to a week is a thing. that's why they happen. And so there's that delay you can get on top of the normal delay of pushing all the way till September. We're trying to a few Republican governors and representatives and Donald Trump are looking to reopen the government as soon as possible, trying to do it in May, right? Or I'm not government, reopen businesses. But you're still giving people their relief checks all the way up through September. How does that add up if you think that they need it, but then you can still delay it?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
One other way that these stimulus checks are going to be a bit of a scam was revealed on The Prospect by David Dan, friend of the show, who had some great reporting on it. And the major issue is that the check is to you, right? But that doesn't mean that you're going to get the money or that your expenses will be relieved by the money. So I want to give you just a little bit of his article. It is available at The American Prospect. Go take a look. But in his reporting, he says, Congress did not exempt CARES Act payments from private debt collection, and the Treasury Department has been reluctant to exempt them through its rulemaking authority. This means that individuals could see their payments transferred from their hands into the hands of their creditors, potentially leaving them with nothing. Banks would be first in line to grab the payments to offset a delinquent loan or past due fees. Even if the individual thinks their account with that bank is closed, if the payment posts there, the bank could conceivably use them to cover old debts. And banks have the right to offset any deposits to pay off those loans, overdraft fees, other charges, in front of the line for repayment of debts, ahead of even other private debt collectors. This story could not be big enough. And unfortunately, not that many people are talking about it yet, but it's great reporting there. There are other concerns. By the way, I will just quickly say not all of the concerns that I've seen expressed about these checks seem to be borne out by the facts. There are the thing about it being like an advance on your tax return. From what I have seen, that's not actually true, and you will not have to repay it and all that. We will continue to see because more is coming out from an incredibly complicated piece of legislation. But I want to accurately list all the ways that it's a scam without feeding into some beliefs about it that might not be grounded in truth.
Right. Yeah. So this is obviously one of them. And of course, you know, the money goes to the people that they are working for first. And this apparently is more important than potentially stimulating or helping people survive each day. And that was the other concept. As you said, you want to make sure everything is true and up to standards. But I also heard there's things like, you know, people that owe child support, things like that. And like it's going straight away. The same way would be for any other kind of income. And so normally these things would be protected if it was something from the government, like, you know what, Social Security checks. I think you mentioned the Social Security checks and your normal disability, things like that. It would come and this does not fall with those. So it allows people to do this. So think about it this way. The banks and these corporations, all these people have paid enough money to these politicians, have supported them enough throughout the years that they get first dibs on everything, even when it comes to something as dire as this. So if you've paid an entity to think of you first before anyone else, it goes across the board to like, oh, here's an opportunity for us to get some, recoup some of the things that we weren't able to get. I mean, however small it may be, because $1,200. I thought the mortgage industry, the banking systems, everybody's struggling. Everybody's falling apart. They need some more stimulus and some more bailouts from the government. Don't get it twisted. The stimulus bill did not solely give $1,200 to everyone who qualifies for it in America. It went to more than that. But I'm sure we're being told, there's plenty of people in this country who think, oh man, yeah, that stimulus, all that money that's in it is going to the American people. No, it's not. No, it's not. And even the parts that are going to the American people are still not going to the American people for things like this. And that's the way it was planned. Do you think they accidentally stumbled across overlooking, allowing people to get their money? No. Yeah. They're not that dumb.
Yeah. And look, so it is complicated. So I see people still saying that it'll be deducted from a credit on your tax return. And look, I will continue to do research, but from everything that I've read, that is not what I'm seeing. And I'm seeing, by the way, there are many sort of fact checks on this that I'm looking at and seeing that that's not the case, but we will continue to see. And I will try to find out more before the next show. In any event, everything about this stimulus check, just the more that I see of it, the more angry I get about the entire situation, that it was set up as a one-time thing, that they see no need to have it be recurring, despite the fact that coronavirus is not a one-time thing that's going to go away after a month, that it was supposed to be the first step, and it seems like there ain't going to be any other steps. I don't see any legislation being worked on that has a chance of passing. The House Dems have some relatively good stuff that is never going to get past Mitch McConnell. Trump would veto it. You know,
right.
And so it looks like this $1,200 is going to be all that we get. And if that's not enough to let you weather the storm, then the government is going to leave you high and dry. Maybe states and maybe cities will do something. I don't know. I don't know what resources they have financially to help people. They're doing some good stuff in terms of stopping evictions and foreclosures. But just every detail we find out about this is just so devastating when you see the number of new unemployed. Look, tomorrow we're going to have the updated numbers. What do you think it's going to be? Is it going to be 3 million? Is it going to be 6 million again, additional? And even that won't represent totally having caught up on the backlog.
Yeah, it's you know what, this it's one of those things. Every I feel like I go to this point for almost anything. I really would like to know what regular Americans, if you ask them on the street, what they think of this move, also with the move of like not getting another amount of money for this continuing pandemic crisis, lockdown, lack of employment situation will go, because we have this low self-esteem approach as regular Americans that, oh, no, I got $1,200, man. I'm lucky to have gotten that. Look how generous. Again, and we refer back to what we just talked about, Trump making sure he has his name on these checks because he wants to make sure he knows, look what I've done for you, you sorry peasants. You don't even deserve this, but I'm so gracious. I gave you this much.
Yeah.
So I hope that we get enough of a buildup of self, again, self-esteem in our bellies that we're like, I deserve more than this. You know how much I give you? And yes, even people who don't make much money, you give tons to the government in every way. You're giving. This country doesn't move without you, as you can see. Because when people aren't working, what's happening? Billionaires are complaining because they need you.
More details, as I said, are available at the American Prospect. Go look at David's work and you'll find out more details about this. I don't know what could be done at this point to change it, even if they had the desire to, which they probably don't. It could have been, from the beginning, it could have been deemed federal benefits, and then private debt collectors wouldn't have been able to get access to it. I'm sure that that was just an oversight. They didn't think to do it at the time. So recently, I noticed a couple different pieces of news that it doesn't take a ton of work to connect them, but I think that when you do, it reeks of corruption. So why don't we start to work through some of this and see what we make of all of it? The first involves a Donald Trump comment about sports. Take a look.
In sports, we want to get our sports back. So importantly, these will be some separate calls. Some will be together, by the way, lists, and some will be separate. But we have to get our sports back. I'm tired of watching baseball games that are 14 years old. But I haven't actually had too much time to watch. I would say maybe I watch one batter and then I get back to work.
So we got to get our sports back. I'm sick of 14-year-old baseball games. I don't know if you're watching those. And then he realized, oh, wait, I just admitted I'm watching a bunch of sports. I only watch one pitch and then I'm back to work. Yeah, sure, buddy.
Jesus, sure.
So he wants his sports back, JR.
Yeah, see, everyone wants their sports back. I mentioned before, this is maybe a week ago, Major League Baseball, who was just trying to get their season started. I'm one of the, you know, red-blooded Americans that misses baseball. They had some plans. They were trying to get things going where they'd quarantine the entire league in Arizona and let them play at multiple facilities. All they do is go to the park and go back to their quarantined areas and back to the park. So they were trying to formulate a way to do this too. But there's this whole PR problem and this other thing called coronavirus. So that would cause you to maybe have, you know, some pushback. It's an issue. But, you know, that's never stopped anyone like Donald Trump and putting together this coalition of people. I mean, what, Dana White was trying to pull a UFC event. He even pulled that off once ESPN and Disney said, we're not going to give you any more money if you do this.
Yeah.
So there's certain things that'll speak to people, and money is always it. But, you know, Trump doesn't ignore it. They're listening to those things either.
Yeah, well, hold on. So while you're on the topic of money, that's really the next step in this chain of corruption. So he says he wants the sports to come back. And in fact, he has taken a number of influential, rich elites who are in the world of various sports. And they're going to be involved in this Great American Economic Revival Industry Group. So let's go to some of these. The names are small. Apologies. But you can see people from the NBA, the MLB, UFC, PGA, NASCAR, NHL, WNBA, all of these people, including Mark Cuban, by the way, who I thought they hated each other. But anyway, two of the team owners from the NFL in there have each donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee in 2017. So isn't it cool that they're going to be involved in the decision of whether it's okay to let sports resume or not? They don't have a vested interest or anything. Yeah, so we're gonna let them get involved.
They paid for their spot.
They 100% did. And here's the thing. So some of those are huge donors. Another interesting name popped up on there. And that's right in the middle from the WWE of Vince McMahon, who I've heard of before. He gets to be involved. Whether you are a fan or not of Vince McMahon, I don't think that you think he should be on that squad or not. But he is. He's going to be one of the people involved in this decision. So step two, get the right sort of people involved in this committee.
Yeah, so when it comes to a couple of NFL owners and not a bunch of, like, I get the commissioners of each league. If I'm the commissioner of the NBA, and Adam Silver, from accounts that I've seen of him, has done a good job. He actually listens to the fan base and a lot of times the players and everyone, and they generally allow a good, robust experience and interaction between fans, players, and then the league and ownership groups and all that stuff to the best degree I think possible. So even someone like that, Adam Silver, showing up to this, I mean, maybe it's a mixed bag. If I'm the commissioner of a major sports league, I'm going to show up. I'll be there. It's my responsibility to do that. So, but when it comes to certain owners that are now showing up to give their voice because they've given $1 million to this guy, like, yeah, I'm coming to collect. Because right now I'm hurting from what I usually get, not hurting as far as actual hurting, but hurting from my usual bottom line. And I need to make sure I influence this in a way that's going to help me out. But, you know, the owner from the Indianapolis Colts isn't necessarily there.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably gave money to. Let's keep it real.
Probably. I will fact check that. But we do know that Vince is, you know, and he's a rich guy and he's well connected. And some of those connections actually happen to be in the White House and connect to the White House, because I want to move now to the third step in this web of corruption. And that will be that on April 9th, just a few days ago, Linda McMahon's re-elect Trump super PAC commits $18.5 million to Florida, according to a reporter from MyNews 13. So lots of money going into getting Trump re-elected in a very important swing state there. So he wants the sports to come back. He says that. He puts it out there. I want sports to come back. Then he gets a lot of people involved in sports, including people who've already given him money, involved in this decision. Then the wife of one of those people commits $18.5 million to getting him reelected in Florida. But that's not really like a quid pro quo, because that would then require that they got something out of it. Oh, wait, the WWE is now considered an essential service in Florida.
Ugh.
I think the circle is now complete. $18.5 million, and they get to go back to making way more than $18.5 million.
This is how you train your dog, you know? You give them a little bit of treats and make them do certain tricks. You get happy with it. You can show it off to your friends on Facebook. And be like, look, my dog spins around, he rolls over. Oh, good treat. I'm being a good dog trainer. And then eventually you're like, man, my dog expects certain things as long as I promise this treat. So this is the same thing. So the WWE group is like, oh, great. We got him trained. We know we'll give him some morsels. And then he'll take it and he'll do what we want to make us look better, to give us more money back. So in this case, hey, oh man, he's about to do what we want. Let's go ahead and make sure we do the one thing that he wants. This is his treat, the opportunity to get reelected. So let's go ahead and give him this treat in Florida, and he's going to do what we want. He's their puppy.
I know that some people are probably thinking, well, wait, hold on. There's a flaw in this, because Trump isn't in charge of Florida. Despite what he says about total authority, he can't actually force them to list it as an essential service. He's not in charge, but Ron DeSantis is. And I want you to think, if there was going to be a governor who was not going to be able to be influenced by Donald Trump, would it be the governor who made a video of him literally indoctrinating his baby into the cult of Trump? Go watch the videos, by the way. And I just want to play part of this, because Ron DeSantis was asked about this change. And we don't know for sure that Trump contacted him, but that's my going belief. And so I want you to look at his response to this question, the way he speaks, and I want you to see if you think he is being honest here, or if he is scrambling to come up with some sort of excuse after following orders from up above.
So you've given WWE, for example, the ability to function.
So as people, so, you know, that Disney asked to have some of the gardening people be able to go because they have all the millions of dollars worth of stuff there, and it would just go bad. And then we said, okay, is there going to be social distance? Yeah, people are going to go out and work themselves. Obviously, WWE, there's no crowd or anything, so it's a very very small number of people. So we just kind of look at it on a case-by-case basis. I think that we do need to support like content, like especially like sports and events. And we're not going to have crowds there. I get that. But if we can do, like if NASCAR does a race and can televise it without having large crowds, I think that's a good thing. I'd like to see Woods and Mickelson do the golf or whatever, because that's social distance. You wouldn't have a gallery there. You wouldn't have crowds. But to put that on TV, I think people have been starved for content. I mean, we haven't had a lot of new content since the beginning of...
Okay, so here's the thing. If I could do a brief impersonation of that. And so if you have one reason, you say the reason. Not if, well, you know, I think there's going to be social distancing. And man, I really would like to see golf. And my, we don't have much content. People are really running dry of content. And wouldn't it be great if like... No, you're scrambling there, buddy. You don't even know the sports you're talking about.
I was just going to say that part because he said, I want to see Mickelson and them do the golf thing. Is that how it works?
That's, you know, I like to get my clubs and go do the golf thing.
Remember John Kerry caught so much hell when he ran for calling Lambeau Field Lambert Field, yeah. I think he called it.
Exactly.
It was the end. It was more vicious than swift boating.
It was the end. Can you imagine if Trump ever made a mistake like that? Every day, constantly. Anyway, and look, I'm going to say, while I think we need to acknowledge that this is likely the product of corruption, I don't even care if the WWE goes back on. If the athletes are tested and if there's no crowd, there are worse things that could be done. And I do think that if we can have some of the entertainment that normally goes on, I think that's good for people if they're going to be quarantined for a long time. I got nothing against the WWE. I used to watch wrestling for literally years. I'm thinking about possibly starting again. I love The Rock and Kurt Angle and Stone Cold and a million people, Lita, all of them. I was a huge fan. I got nothing against it, but I hate the idea that Vince McMahon, by virtue of being married to Linda McMahon, they can spend a little bit of money and they get a special... like privilege that others might not. That's what pisses me off.
Isn't that what's crazy? If you think about it again, we talk about how everyone's hurt so bad, but Tillman Fertitta, I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, the owner of the 100,000 restaurants across the world and the Houston Rockets, he was talking about how much he's hurt and he had to lay off all of his people immediately because he's doing them a favor. All the these billionaires, these corporations keep talking about all the money they can't just recoup. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? But Linda McMahon and him can drop a couple million dollars, several million dollars on a super PAC right now and have no problem with it.
Yep.
So in comparison, of course, they have all this money. Hey, you regular guy at home making $50,000 a year. Or, hey, you even more regular person at home making $35,000 a year. What percentage of your wealth you've got will allow you to just give this money right now? Can you give $250 right now? No, you can't. You're trying to figure out how to get some more groceries in the house because you don't know how long you're going to be in the house.
Yeah.
Just to let you know where the priorities are.
Someone's telling me I should watch the Boneyard match from WrestleMania last weekend. I'm considering it. I don't know. It's just everybody's different. I don't know if I can get back into it, but I used to watch it. Right now in Michigan, there's a protest going on against Whitmer's like shelter at home order. And it's a bunch of people who are not social distancing, all crowding around. Some of them are going to get coronavirus. And you've probably seen, JR, the pastors who have died after saying that, you know, like our religious freedom's more important, like we should, and they've died from coronavirus. It's so sad.
I didn't realize it's taken that turn for death for some of these guys that I hadn't seen these updates.
They did.
I mean, they said it, I don't know if these particular ones said it, but the ones that I did read about and see did say, hey, if you catch it and die, that was God's plan. Hey, all they did was live their life the way they wanted to. I can't even be mad at them. They knew they might die. They're happy with it. There's plenty of people who commit suicide. So, I mean, it's – and not to say that it's okay, but in this case, that's what they wanted to do in that particular instance. So, sorry, we're on tangents, but I talked about Dak Prescott, Cowboys quarterback. He's having any social distancing or lack of social distancing parties, practices he's been having. That's what's at least been said and documented and accused. So allegedly having these things. So if he's putting himself in danger and people don't get mad or call the cops on him, do all this stuff, hey, he's going to do it. That's the consequence. Yeah. So that's the risk that he's deciding to take. As long as he's not building crowds and coming up to your house, or, you know, the way people start doing assaults on each other and spitting on people and saying, I have it, you know, that type of stuff. But if you're out and about, or if you see someone social media posting out, hey, man, that's them, bro.
I agree with you up until it's an authority figure that people pattern their behaviors on. It's like a pastor, they're like flock. Listens to them. And if he said shelter at home, some of them would.
Yes. So,
like, imagine if I told the audience, this is all bullshit, go out there. And some of them did. I don't think I have that much effect. But what if some of them did, got coronavirus? Like, it's one thing for me to live my life. It's another for me to use the influence that I have. It's one thing to influence someone to take flat tummy tea. It's another to influence them to get coronavirus.
Yeah, so I guess when it comes to spiritual leaders, that is a lie. I'm thinking of, like, athletes, celebrities, if you see someone out, or just even Joe Schmo that you knew from high school and he should be quarantining or he's not wearing a mask. Cool. I hear you that it's frustrating, but it's kind of hard to force people. And if they're putting themselves in a situation where they can get themselves in trouble, kind of protect yourself, get away from them.
Chris Cuomo recently got a lot of news coverage for his just very open and honest assessment of what he thinks about his career. He's to some extent walked it back, which we'll get to, but here are some of his original comments.
I want to spend my time doing things that I don't think are valuable enough to me personally. Like what? Well, I don't like what I do. I'm some loser, fat tire biker to be able to pull over and get in my face and in my space and talk bullshit to me. It matters to me more than making millions of dollars.
There you have Chris Cuomo admitting that he, you know, like in the extended comments, he talks about he's not sure if what he does has any effect. Is it worth it? And I saw that, JR, that you guys talked about this on the main show yesterday. I really wish that I could have been involved because I'm really interested in this. And like I said, he did walk it back a bit. I'll get to that. But what do you think about Chris Cuomo's original comments, at least?
He's being human. So, like, the human side of you is coming out. I mean, you're sitting in the house, you're quarantined, you have the virus, and then he's going through some significant symptoms of it. And there's moments of like, you know, mortality is going through your head now, right? And you're thinking, what have I done with my life? Think of how many hours he had to sit there and look at the ceiling in pain and just think. So as he's thinking, he's like, what am I doing? What if I die tomorrow? What have I done? Yeah. And you may start to think, yeah, I made these millions of dollars, cool, good stuff, buying houses. I can live in the I have a Hamptons house, and I have a summer home here and a winter home there and all this good stuff. Not to say specifically he has the stuff, but I'm just some other person that has money. If every day you go to work, you don't like the things you're doing to get those things. We all know work is generally the majority of time you spend. So everyone gets used to, you know, if you're making $50,000 a year, it's better than when you're making 25. So eventually you get used to that too, you know. So he's used to the millions and now he's thinking, but I'm not happy and I just might die. Yeah. It's a human moment.
Yeah, look, I want to read his updated comments because some of what I actually think about this sort of included in that. So here's what he said after the initial wave of news around his original comments. He says, it's not true. I never said it. I never meant it. I think he means more that he never meant it because he definitely said it. And by the way, I'm not covering this to be like, haha, look at Chris Cuomo. I actually agree with a lot of what he said. That's the only reason I'm bringing this back after 2 days. This ain't news. This happened 2 days ago. I just really want to talk about it. So he goes on to say, I love where I am. I have never been in a better position professionally than I am in right now. They've been so good, he means CNN. They've been so supportive of me in ways I could never have imagined. I've never had a group of people professionally care about me the way they have shown. I'll never be able to repay them, but I'll try hard to do so. I've never been more grateful. I've never been on a better team. But he goes on to say, it is frustrating to do this job in an environment where people are not interested and open. It is hard to practice journalism when people are so intent on believing what they want to believe for political advantage. It makes you question, is it worth the effort? Can I make a difference? Can I personally make a difference? Is the way I'm doing this working? And that is where I could not agree more with Chris Cuomo. And I say this on the show all the time. What frustrates me the most is how little reality matters and how little demonstrating something, like showing a hypocrisy, showing a quote back to back, like revealing all of this, how little it actually matters, because it seems like to a lesser extent than ever, people are not basing their view of what needs to happen or what should be done on an accurate assessment of where people are, what they've done, what they've said, and all of that. And I think I've said before that my fear is that, like, we're competing with cable news, obviously, but that's not to say that that's the only place where, like, financial concerns are having a negative impact on people's willingness to be honest and upfront. Like, people are competing for audience, and some audience is trained, like with drugs, to want a stronger, more distilled, purified version of what they liked. And people are trained to just believe that what's important is not having, like, a person reveal what they believe to be true. It's them telling me that what I believe is true, no matter what, to get me to watch them, yeah, to get me to give them money or whatever. And, like, it's very easy for us to look and see that obviously Trump fans are the best possible example of that, but they're not the only example. And so, like, one of the reasons I feel so comfortable saying this to this audience is because I feel like you guys are the least, that it's least applicable to you. But I share, obviously, with a very different audience and very different political beliefs and very different political preferences than Chris Cuomo. I share a lot of those concerns. And I do appreciate, by the way, I will say, one of the reasons I'm not being more critical of him is he's one of the few people on CNN who's willing to give progressives a chance. Unfortunately, coronavirus hit just as they were starting to do that. So, like, I got brought on once and then never again because we don't have studios anymore. But yeah.
It seems like he's bottled up. Like, you don't get a chance to give his real opinion or thoughts on things or just out in society. He mentioned all that stuff. You know, the fat tire biker guy, whatever he said about him. So there's that frustration with not being able to be real, but also maybe this could be an opportunity. Okay, look. So when it comes to the way we would do the shows that we do on the network, hosts and producers work hand in hand. Many times hosts kind of double as a producer because we're doing the same thing as far as this approach. And you have to know the content enough to portray it. So in this case, you know, producers kind of control a show, make sure there's certain guests on, we're gonna go to this thing and, oh, let's cut that. And the host kind of goes with it. Maybe this is not, but, you know, of course they probably have the bigger say. But I think this is an opportunity for him, if he's upset about this approach of empty conversations with people who don't really believe what they're saying, they're doing it for the sake of being on air and yelling and getting some kind of name for themselves. This is a chance to change things. Come back whenever he can or whenever things are happening normalcy and be like, listen, we're going to shuffle the way we do this. We're not going to do any more fakeness. We're not going to do any more argument segments. We're not going to do any more, hey, here's this Trump guy versus, hey, here's this Biden guy fight. That's where the soul is being sucked out of it.
Yeah.
And that's not what he wants to do anymore. Maybe there's an opportunity to mold your show to be more real. Give it a chance.
I think that you're 100% right. And I have to assume that he has the power to do that. Like, not every host gets to just do whatever they want with their show. I want to just make this about, like, movies and TV shows. But no, I can't do that. But I do it a little bit. I still do it a little bit. No, but so he can make those. And by the way, in his comments, he says, I hate having on politicians who are just going to say, you know, what the narrative is supposed to be and not be honest. Like, professional commentators who just their job is to be on CNN or whatever, like, so few of them actually seem like they think for a second before they say something. Totally. They know what the script is.
Totally.
And that's why, Alejandra Rojas is so great, is because, like, you can tell that she's being authentic. And the vast majority of them aren't. Like, and think about, from Chris Cuomo's point of view, I don't even remember if this, I don't think it was on his show. I think it was on Anderson Cooper's. But, like, let's say every day you have Jeffrey Lord on. Like, how much must you hate your job after a while to know that I'm forced to have this guy on who has never once said anything honest or real? And that's, and he's just one of them. There's tons. I know he's not on there anymore. There's just tons of them. And they have to fill the show with them. Have actual people, have actual workers, actual activists, politicians who haven't yet been corrupted by the system. Have real people on. And maybe your job will be a little bit easier.
Perfect example, John. Kelly McEnany was on Cuomo's primetime regularly. She's the one who said on his show, hey, Trump has never lied, and his jaw dropped. And he goes, yeah, I know you're supposed to support him, but this is insane. And so look, and what is she now?
Yeah.
She's now the new press secretary. Am I right? Isn't that the position she got?
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't mean anything anymore, but she is.
Yeah. She kissed up enough, and she knows Donald Trump watches TV, and she's like, I'm going to continue to say the most ridiculous things because that's how you get somewhere with this administration. And look, it got her somewhere. She couldn't have gotten there without this show giving her the platform to kiss butt constantly on television every night with insane points of view and then get a job. Yeah. Hey, she's probably like, thank you.
Yeah. And look, and I don't even know, does he choose that person? I don't know. For all I know, CNN has a relationship with her, and he's forced to. I know that Anderson Cooper used to regularly look really angry at some of his guests that he had on every day. And it's like I don't, like, if I, let's say I hated Ken Klippenstein, I'd stop having him on. I get to do that. But I don't know for sure that some of these hosts do. Chris Cuomo's, he's very rich, he's well-established, he probably can, I don't know. But anyway, again, he's one of the few that actually has given progressives a platform, and I agree with a lot of his concerns. We're in very different positions. I don't have millions I can just fall back on, but I do wonder at the end of the day if it's having any effect. And this is something that, like, you know, we don't often talk about this on air, but these are conversations that that lots of people at various points have in TYT, and thankfully we have each other to sort of help get us through it. We are on lockdown. It is week, I don't know, it could be 2, it could be 12, I don't know. I feel like it's been going on for a long time. And it might, in fact, end up going on for a really long time. We're going to get to that in one sec. If it doesn't, though, let's say that it does end at the end of May, you know, are people going to be willing to just go back to the way things were? According to polls, not necessarily. Just 20% of Americans would immediately return to normal activity once state restrictions are lifted, while 71% would wait to see whether the change in guidelines led to increased confirmed COVID-19 cases before deciding what to do. 10% would continue limiting social contact regardless of development. So it's very easy to focus on, like, the you know, the Trump fans who are protesting right now to get out there and you'd be exposed to the virus and die. But a lot of Americans are very nervous. Like, they probably don't like being in lockdown, but they're nervous about being back out there and being exposed to this.
There's, and as you point out the numbers, there's going to be varying levels of people with their comfort levels for this. And I think I specifically asked you earlier, because how long will you continue this lower easing into? Because say we have this full level of trust and security by late summer, midsummer even. There'll still be plenty of people that still rock their masks. I mean, we still see people sometimes that rock their masks just in general everyday society. And we're like, oh my God, they have something. But you never know, they're probably trying to protect themselves. So everyone's going to have their different levels of dropping off from things like this. And who knows? I mean, there's nothing wrong with being cautious, in my opinion. You guys know how I am.
So we'll go a little further. You asked me earlier, you know, like, how long are you going to wear your mask? So I'm gonna turn that around on you. How long are you going to wear your mask once we, like, let's say end of May, we can go back to the studio, which technically we could be at the studio right now. News is an essential service. We could there. TYT cares about their employees, so they have shut down the studio. But I'm curious, are you going to be wearing masks for months and gloves and carrying Purell and all that?
Well, like I mentioned at the top, there's certain things I won't touch ever again, right? I overlooked it, right? So that's already one change. But to a degree, depending on the situation, like if I feel comfortable enough to go to a game, I'll probably bring a mask, throw it in my backpack and see exactly what my surroundings are like. If it's crowded, yeah, I'll go ahead and toss it on because that doesn't hurt to be safe, you know? So things like that. But if I'm out at a park and there's just like two other families there, yeah, I'll leave with mask off. You know, things like that. It has to be situational for me. Mm-hmm. Even when they say it's okay, because now, I mean, as if I didn't have enough distrust already before, especially with this particular administration, that I'm not really going to believe when they say everything is great.
Yeah,
I'm going to take it to my own level.
Yeah, and look, eventually we'll have a vaccine, hopefully before, you know, the next COVID or the next other virus starts spreading around. I think that we will have to get used to the fact. Remember, we used to mock, like, people in Asia, like, why are they always wearing these masks?
Yeah.
That was terrible then, and the joke's going to be on us because things are going to change. Maybe not forever. Maybe we'll go back to normal. Maybe there won't be another pandemic for a few years. People start to forget. But that's going to take a while. By the way, as I alluded to, The social distancing might take a while. So there was this report put together. The lead author says, we found that one-time social distancing measures are likely to be insufficient to maintain the incidence of SARS-CoV-2 within the limit of critical care capacity in the U.S. What seems to be necessary in the absence of other sorts of treatments are intermittent social distancing periods. Intermittent until when? According to this Harvard study, until 2022.
So intermittent social distancing moments. So I have a picture in my brain of this, but I'm not sure if it's very accurate, you know? So like what, certain segments of the population can come out and others can't. We're going to do this by like city, you know? There's, and how you get people to follow a limited version of a lack of social distancing. It seems even harder than getting people to do it overall, which we're trying to do right now.
Yeah. Look, people, I think that people have been pretty good overall. There's the protests or whatever, but I think that people have been pretty good overall in supporting each other and supporting the most vulnerable by going along with these. Hopefully that lasts. We'll see. Maybe people will start to freak out. Maybe people start to get used to it and realize that you can do a lot sort of remotely. And a lot of like the long distance travel we were doing isn't necessarily necessary, the plane trips and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I don't know. 2022 is a long time away. When you think about Bill Gates, you probably think of him as a businessman, but there's a very good chance that you might first and foremost think of him as a philanthropist, especially over the past decade or so, thanks to the very well-publicized efforts of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But is their charity everything that it's been described as? Are there concerns lurking behind the surface? Well, we are lucky enough to be joined on the program today by freelance journalist Jim Schwab, who had an awesome in-depth analysis of the philanthropic efforts of Bill Gates over at The Nation. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
Thank you for coming here. We're going to have a link in the description to the full article, and people should definitely go take a look for a ton of supplementary information. But before we launch into some of the specifics, I am curious what led to this report being put together.
I mean, I think like a lot of us, I've read the headlines over the decade, the favorable headlines about the Gates Foundation, which is so headline ready. Every time they give away $1 million or $10 million or $100 million, we read the headline about all the good that they're doing, but no journalists really take a step back and look backwards at what they've actually done. So at this point, the Gates Foundation has been around for 2 decades. They've given away something like $60 billion, more than $60 billion, 20,000 charitable grants. So, you know, no journalist has really done a systematic analysis of all the work that they've kind of done or tried to draw a circle around that work. So I felt like it was long overdue. And it's something that I could do. I got a fellowship to do it from the Alicia Patterson Foundation, which was lucky.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned that this sort of work hasn't been done before. And it's not to say that it could not have been done before. In the article, you talk about a documentary that was done about him, sort of sketching out who he really is. But while some stuff is revealed in the documentary, a lot, including the financial backing of, you know, the organization that helped to put together the documentary, the links that they have with Bill Gates are not explored. And lots of, like, people are being used, and there's no mention of the fact that they themselves have received grants from Bill Gates. Do you think that, I mean, this seems like a pretty clear sort of conflict of interest, but it's one of only many that you document there. Is that one of the reasons that we haven't seen more critical analysis of these charitable donations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's hard to really overestimate these kind of financial conflicts of interest. So in my report in The Nation, I sort of mentioned just in passing the $250 million that the Gates Foundation has put into news and journalism. So that includes organizations like Participant Media, which produced this documentary we're talking about on Netflix. This is, you know, a three-part documentary. There was plenty of time to raise critical questions. Whether it really is a documentary or independent investigation, I think is debatable. It reads more like a hagiography to me. It's pretty uncritical. And as you note, they interview a lot of people within Gates' sphere of influence to try and understand Bill Gates. But certainly to some extent, that is part of the reason why you don't have more critical reporting on Gates, is because Gates is putting money into so many influential media outlets.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the other conflicts of interest in this article. So I want to give people a few numbers from it. Gave away close to $2 billion in tax-deductible charitable donations to private companies, close to $250 million of which went to companies that the foundation itself has a vested interest, a financial vested interest in. I'm assuming that that is legal, but it certainly seems unethical in some sense. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, about giving charitable donations to corporations that you will benefit from the continued financial success of?
Yeah, so, I mean, there are rules. Congress and the IRS does have rules about this, but it's mainly about, you know, if you and I own a company and we run a foundation that's giving charitable grants to that company, like a really egregious example. But if you're a minority shareholder in a company, like Bill Gates has a few million dollars invested in these companies to which he's giving charitable grants, those rules simply don't apply. So I think that there's plenty of room to expand oversight over this idea of self-dealing. You know, whether there's the political will to do so is a different question.
Mm-hmm. And so, look, I mean, no one is going to ignore that, of course, some good obviously comes of all giving all this money, but it is clear that he and his wife, that the organization, they're getting something for their money. You know, we can speculate about potential financial returns from that, but also he's gaining a great deal of influence in a number of different areas, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the bigger picture of this. It's not, you know, the argument I make in the piece is not that the Gates Foundation is using charity to enrich themselves or their foundation, although you could argue that is happening. The real issue at hand is the political influence that they're gaining over public policy through their charity. I mean, your listeners are a smart bunch and they're probably not naive about this, but I do think that some people have this idea that Bill Gates is indiscriminately giving money to Save the Children and the Boys and Girls Club to help the world. And that's true, you know, he is doing that, but he's also giving money to the largest multinational companies in the world, empowering them to enter into new markets where they can sell their products, not for a charitable purpose, but, you know, to make money.
You know, I think that your report is part of a sort of new wave of people starting to question some of this philanthropy. Generally, you know, people are either naturally are or either encouraged to be simply happy that it's happening at all and to not question any potential benefits that the individuals are getting from it. But I'm interested in what you think about these new models. So for instance, the Gates Foundation is a new model of charity. He calls it creative capitalism, catalytic philanthropy, like, or philanthropy. So I'm curious, should we be happy that they're giving this money? Should there be sort of more regulation over it in terms of, like, you talk about in the article, the huge amount of tax benefits that hypothetically are coming from this, even at the same time that he brags about the fact that he has paid more taxes than anyone else in history.
Yeah.
So talk to me about these new models. What are some of the issues that you find with it?
Well, I mean, you tee up the core issue, John, which is that when Gates gives away a dollar, $100 million, we have to see 40 or 50% of all of that money as actually our money as taxpayers. This is a little bit complicated, but I'll try and explain it. You know, Gates, every dollar that Gates gives away, he's not paying taxes on. And the taxes he would normally pay on that should be somewhere around 40% if you include estate tax, capital gains tax, income tax. But he's able to avoid all of that through charity. So, you know, it's fine and well if Gates wants to give away his money and try to eradicate polio and do all these other things, but we have to understand that he is really has kind of sole power and authority over how this money is used versus if he were paying full freight in taxes, then half of this money would be going to the CDC and the NIH to deal with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously he's not alone in this. There are a number of other billionaires, you know, some of whom might not necessarily have the, you know, the interest in areas of public health and stuff like that. You talk about a group, the Philanthropy Roundtable, which has Gates on it, but also has Charles Koch. I don't normally see them associated very much in, you know, public conversations around giving. What do you think about this organization, the fact that it's bringing together people who would at least pitch themselves as coming from very different parts of the political spectrum?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think we have to see Bill Gates as a billionaire. I mean, he is the second richest human on earth. He is a philanthropist, but he's also a billionaire. And he does have common cause with other billionaires. And you're going to see this common causes in places like the Philanthropy Roundtable, which is part and parcel of this growing special interest group that defends the rights of billionaires to give freely and to give anonymously. Mm-hmm. So even in a world in which we talk about regulating philanthropy, putting rules over how billionaires can or can't give money away, you're going to have a really substantial pushback from groups like the Philanthropy Roundtable, these nonprofit groups, advocacy groups, lobby groups, who are going to push back on behalf of their members and supporters, which are like, you know, Charles Koch and Bill Gates.
Yeah, and there's one other area of pushback that I want to make sure that we get to. Obviously, he's giving away a lot of money. So there are proposals to take some of his money, for instance, through something like a wealth tax, which he and a lot of other millionaires and billionaires are not supportive of. And they will often use sort of as a sort of rhetorical shield the fact that they already give away a great deal of money. What do you make of that? They want to sort of have unilateral control over it, where it goes, what benefits they get from it, while pitching themselves as being very giving. When the proposal comes from the other side, they don't seem quite as interested in it.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that Bill Gates has managed to position himself as a real champion on taxes. He and Warren Buffett, who's the other main contributor to the Gates Foundation, every year around tax time, they show up on all the cable news programs talking about how billionaires should pay more in taxes. But at the same time, when there is a tax proffered, like the wealth tax that you mentioned, you know, they're going to find ways to resist it and avoid it. You know, Bill Gates' idea is that through philanthropy, he's giving away all of his money, which is doing things like reducing dynastic wealth. He's saying, I'm not going to give my money to my children. You're not going to have this landed aristocracy from the Gates family because I'm going to give away all my money. So you don't need to take my money through a wealth tax, which would be taking 2 or 3% of his total assets a year because he's just able to give it all away. So, you know, that is really, in the article, I describe it as kind of a pinnacle example of tone-deaf privilege, this idea that a billionaire has a choice about whether they want to pay taxes or they can give the money away as a philanthropist and avoid taxes. And when they give their money away, again, they're using it to influence public policy. So, you know, it's really, I don't know, I find that so remarkable that they have that choice, yeah.
Yeah, it's the sort of choice that's never given us. I can never say, well, yeah, the sales tax on this just seems really high. And honestly, I pay state tax, so I feel like you're getting enough, so back off on the sales tax.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't really work. In any event, look, we've only touched on you've so much that you go into in the article, so I encourage everyone watching this to go over to The Nation to read your article. Tim, it was amazing research and much needed because, as you point out, there is a vacuum where people are starting to be questioning of this sort of new model of billionaire charity, but there is so much more to discover, and so thank you very much for the work that you've done in this area.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.